You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Just before we get to our guest, if you like our interviews here at Cannabis Health Radio and want to help us out, go to our webpage and make a donation. Anything you can do to help us continue with our mission to help people around the world. And now to our guest. Our guest today needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway. He's an entertainer, comedian, director, writer, winner of a Grammy, a participant in Dancing with the Stars, and a former federal prison inmate. And he wasn't even in politics. In the summer of 2012, he announced that he had a prostate cancer and said he was going to treat his cancer with cannabis oil. And here to talk about cannabis, healthcare, and anything else he wants to talk about is Tommy Chong, who joins us from California. Tommy, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for doing this.
Good to talk to you too, sir.
Tommy, with your prostate cancer and your rectal cancer, you once described yourself as an old car with a little rust in the exhaust pipe. What's the state of your health today?
I went electric.
Good one.
I had the exhaust area closed up and rerouted, and now I've got one of those bags, you know. But I use it in my act now. I tell everybody that I named my colostomy bag the Donald. After Donald Trump.
Right then.
Because it's always full of crap and hot air. So, so you know, I just came from the gym. I'm deadlifting a lot of weight, and I'm healthy as a 79-year-old man can be.
You know, Tommy, if you had not made the decision to use cannabis oil in your cancer and use cannabis, I guess, throughout your lifetime, would you be alive today?
No. No, I'd be gone. I'd be another statistic. No, the cannabis, it not only saved me, you know, when I had cancer, but it also... It also created my career, my whole career, my whole life's work, you know. I mean, I was a high school dropout in Calgary, Alberta. And then it was the cannabis. I got turned on the weed about 1957, quit school, moved out to Vancouver, got involved in music, ended up being signed with Motown. And then ended up meeting Cheech, and then ended up doing movies and records and a big career, all because of my love affair with cannabis.
Now, how did you first discover that you had prostate cancer? What were some of your symptoms you were experiencing?
I was going to start doing steroids, testosterone. Shots. Mm-hmm. And before you can do that, because I'm a bodybuilder, and before you can do that, you have to make sure that you don't have any cancer in your body, because it's a growth hormone and it will activate the cancer cells. And so I had an examination when I found out I had prostate. But at my age, which was, I guess, around that time, I was about 70. Early 70s, you know, 72, mm-hmm. something like that. The prognosis was that I just left it alone and that I would probably, it was slow acting cancer. And so I changed my diet and I started treating, with marijuana, with the oil, hash oil, or what do they call it? CBD oil, everything. And I held it in check for, I guess, 5 years. And then I went on a show called Dancing with the Stars, And I believe the stress from that show, in other words, I literally danced my ass off.
Did you, because Tommy,
that's
sorry
when I found out.
Sorry to interrupt. Did you stop taking the cannabis while you were doing the Dancing with the Stars?
I did.
Okay.
I did. And I think that was the problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I needed the energy, so I just went on a sabbatical from cancer. And the other thing, when I went to prison, I had to quit smoking, you know, because they drug tested you a lot. I literally quit smoking or doing any cannabis for 3 years.
Well, they rain on your parade, don't they?
Oh, they tried to bust me many times. You know, they set it up because I was in on such a bogus charge that if I had violated, you know, the prison rules, then they would have felt vindicated, you know, for, you know, that I was a hopeless pothead. And so I never smoked pot for almost 3 years. A year before I went in, the 9 months while I was in, and then a year after, I was on probation for a year. I was off cannabis, and I think that's when all the cancer took hold.
Yeah, I think that's really entirely possible. For sake of listeners who don't know the whole story, can you just quickly explain these bogus charges?
I was incarcerated for selling, shipping bongs across the state line, water pipes.
God. Naughty boy.
The only law that was broken, it wasn't my company, it was my son's company. But they threatened to put my son and my wife in jail if I didn't take the fall for them. And there's only one state in the union that would use that, because they tried to get California to press charges, and the California DA wouldn't press. No one would. The only place they would do it was Pennsylvania, the home of the DEA, and that's where I had to go to court in Pittsburgh. They just got me, and it was a setup. It was the George Bush invading Iraq situation, and they wanted to do a preemptive strike on the hippies, which I was the only one. In fact, when they sentenced me on 9/11, they had the hearing in a big courthouse. A room. They moved it from a little courtroom to a big courtroom, expecting a lot of protest. And one guy showed up with a sign that said "Free Marijuana," and I wasn't sure if he was giving away free marijuana or he was making. So they give me 9 months, and I did it. I turned it into a religious retreat, so it worked in my favor. But unfortunately, the cancer took hold, and then when I got out. That's when I was going to go on the growth hormone, and that's when I ended up finding out that I had prostate. And I announced it on John Lemon on CNN.
I've seen that clip.
As a matter of fact, I watched that clip this morning, and the interesting thing was, Tommy, that you outed a doctor here in Victoria.
Yeah.
Tell listeners that story.
I hope I helped him out. But
Neil McKinney.
McKinney, is he still practicing?
He is.
Yes, he is.
And how's he doing?
He's doing great as far as I know.
Yeah. Well, he was a holistic doctor.
Yes,
so.
A holistic naturopathic oncologist.
He had me on all the supplements and everything else. And then he advised me to do the suppositories. But then when I got the rectal cancer, then I had to switch over to the chemo and the radiation because it was very aggressive. And so I now I'm back on the cannabis thing and the diet. I still do the diet, but I don't do the supplements anymore. I probably should, but... Oh, I do a supplement. I do a Abidart. This one pill for lowers or changes the hormonal structure. And that's it. But right now, I'm cancer-free and happy.
Tell me, how did you react to the chemo and radiation?
Again, I just did a shitload of pot. Every time I'd go in there, I'd get high and put on my earphones, and I enjoyed it. It's a mental thing. See, my theory is that what cannabis does, it calms the mind. It brings out the creative side of yourself, and fighting anything, that's the mind is the central command. And so if you're devoid of fear and anxiety, that helps the immune system kick in.
Yeah.
Because like when animals get sick, they crawl off in a corner somewhere and they just hibernate. And they keep everything, you know, they get out of the hunting mode or the running mode, and they get into the hibernation mode. And that's what cannabis does to you. It calms the mind. And by calming the mind, it allows the body to function properly. And that's where the immune system kicks in, and that's what happens.
Interesting, you know, because as we were talking about before we went live here, I've seen a lot of cancer patients. And interesting, the patients who choose to do chemo and radiation, who use cannabis in conjunction with the treatment, come through it far, far better than people who just use or just do chemo and radiation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because it's a pain. It relieves the pain, you know, and it relieves anxiety more than anything. And then the other thing, too, it gives you an appetite. You see, the problem with chemo and radiation is that you lose your appetite. Nothing tastes good. But when you smoke up, everything tastes good. and so I used to go sit in the waiting room and marvel at the fact that they had a big bowl of crackers and not the healthiest food for chemo for cancer people, but that's what they have because people get nauseated.
Right.
Well, I never got nauseated when I was doing any of the treatments.
Yeah.
And of course it was chemo pills. I wasn't on the heavy chemo because of the type of cancer. But like I said, I put on the earphones, listened to music, and just made it a religious experience. And because I knew I could visualize the chemo and the radiation killing the cancer cells.
So you were doing a form of visualization, and certainly there's been studies on that indicate that could be very, very positive.
Totally, because your mind controls the body, and the body reacts to suggestion, you know, because we are, it's all liquid, by the way. You know, our body is 90% liquid, and so that's why water is very important, you know, and that's why you can't drink alcohol, you can't, you know, sodas or anything like that. You want to drink pure water. And that's what I did, pure water and then pure healthy foods. And I just cleansed my body so much so that, you know, it was just, and I'd been working out all my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'd go in there and I'd see guys, you know, they're all hobbled up and, you know, bent over and because they never exercise, you know. And then the more immobile they get, the sicker they get, you know, because exercise is all about circulation. You want to circulate the blood, keep the blood flowing. And I'd see these people hunched over and sitting there and not moving. And they wouldn't move from the time they got there to the time they left. And so the body, you know, it's like I said, an old car. You know, if you don't run the car and it sits there, it'll just rot away. And that's what the body does.
Yeah, we interviewed a woman in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who had thyroid cancer, and she got her thyroid removed, and she underwent chemo for 2.5 years. And the chemo gave her throat cancer. And so she took She took a 6-month break and went back for 2 more years of chemo, decided enough is enough, went on cannabis oil. The tumor in her throat shrunk, disappeared, and on May 10th of this year, she was declared cancer-free.
Yeah, after being expected to die.
But here's the issue. She underwent a total of 198 rounds of chemo, and now she's battling the side effects of the chemo.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
are lifelong.
It kills everything.
Yes.
It just kills everything. Yeah, it was worse. That's why I was lucky. I did the pills. I never did the thing. Yeah, I have a friend that just passed away recently. He had blood cancer, and they were killing him with so much chemo. He lost everything, and he didn't die from cancer. He died from congestion of the lungs because he had no immune system left to fight any infection.
Yeah.
So he died. Yeah, that's what happened. No, it's a death sentence, you know. And eventually they'll see. You know, I was injecting the CBD oil right after my operation, and I did it for a while until the needle just got too hard to take, and I just started doing ingesting instead of injecting, and so. But now, you know, I just. Smoke a little bit of weed and do a little bit of oil now and then, and I'm fine.
Keep that oil coming. It's certainly my experience when people have cleared themselves that you want to keep a steady level of that coming into your system.
Corey, as we're talking about prostate cancer, tell Tommy the story about the woman.
Oh, Tommy. So I speak to lots of people, as you already know, and I had a woman call me whose husband had prostate cancer. And it had metastasized to the bones. So when we're talking about doing suppositories now, after talking with Dr. Malamed, he said, you know, you're only getting 70% absorption if you use capsules. So now what we do is we get people to just get 1 mL syringes, warm up the cannabis oil with a little bit of olive oil,
and stir it and just inject it.
Yeah, and then just insert and squeeze. So that's fine. I got this woman pointed in the right direction, et cetera, and she got what she needed. And a couple of days later, she called me, and she was very irate and upset. And said to me that, you know, her husband, after only 2 suppositories, was refusing to do it anymore. And she had told him, this is your life we're talking about, and you need to walk it off, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, why won't he do it anymore? And she said, well, he says it hurts too much. And I'm like, well, what size syringe are you using? She said, just the little one, like you told me. And I said, oh. And she said, well, you know, it's bad enough, like, that, you know, you got to do the syringe, but it's really hard to push it through that needle. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I went, what? What did you just say? So I think the guy was a really good sport because he actually did it twice.
Oh, my
God. Yes.
Oh. Well, she didn't get the memo, huh?
Evidently not. So, never assume anything because you make an ass of you and me. So, and to be clear with her, so now when I talk to people, I say, minus the needle.
Yeah, minus the needle. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, nothing. If it hurts, then you're doing it wrong.
Oh, the poor guy. But anyway.
Tommy, there has been an enormous swing in public opinion in North America regarding cannabis over the last couple of years. And what do you think is responsible for that?
I think when they saw that little girl on CNN with Sandra Gupta, you know, the doctor?
Yeah,
Charlotte Figge.
When they showed her with epilepsy, and she's barely a year old, and she had never hugged her mother. And then they treated her with CBD oil, you know, the cannabis oil. And then on camera, she hugged her mother for the first time. I think that changed everything. Because now there's no argument. There's no racial bias. There's nothing. This is a medicine that not only works, but it's a miracle drug. It's a miracle medicine, a herb. And then people like Montel Williams, who, you know, would be in a wheelchair if it wasn't for his intake of cannabis every day because of his MS. And all countless people. And when they legalized it in Colorado, for instance, I was there at one of the dispensaries. And the lineup to the dispensaries looked like a lineup to be healed by Jesus. you know.
Wow.
Because there were people in wheelchairs and crutches and people with missing limbs, people with mental problems, people with substance problems. Every sickness you can imagine were lined up to get their legal cannabis. And so when the world sees that, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that all the propaganda that they were spreading, you know, to demonize the weed for the police and for the law enforcement to have a cash cow, then they realize that this is serious enough. It's still, you know, like, you know, right now we have an opioid epidemic going around, which also could be cured with LSD and cannabis combined, you know. So we've got a ways to go, but right now the world is witnessing, and I'm talking about the world. I was just in Berlin, and they just got the medical passed, and it's going through Europe like a wildfire because, you know, Europeans don't like to be behind medically. You know?
No, I think they're kind of ahead over there.
Well, not with the weed in some places. You know, it's still draconian laws. You know, like thanks to it's the American template that did it, because America was paying countries all over the world to eliminate the cannabis crops.
Mm-hmm.
Like countries like India. India used to have a legal hash system, where the king in Nepal would put a stamp on the hash, the best grade hash. And then America came in and offered Nepal $50 million to make everything illegal. And they did. And that's most of the world was getting money from America, millions of dollars from America to keep the cannabis illegal. And now that's down the drain, you know. And so all the European countries, you know, are like, Amsterdam was an anomaly. Amsterdam was legal all through all this stuff. And of course, the Dutch are very, you know, ahead of the curve in everything, art, music, everything. And so why not in cannabis too? But now I feel that, within months, we're going to see such a revolution, a quiet revolution. Because cannabis has been used by indigenous people all over the world nonstop since the beginning of time. And so what's happening now, the world, by and large, has become an indigenous, you know, mm-hmm. thanks to the political systems that are falling apart through you know, people that have a clearer vision now, thanks to cannabis. Because you think about it. For years, you know, during the war years and right after the post-war, alcohol was the drug of the world, and it was to keep the masses inebriated so that they could be controlled, either by law or by, you know, like the military, for instance. They used to ration rum to all the soldiers.
Yes,
you know, that was on a ration, whereas marijuana was illegal. You got drug tested, and that's changing. And once that changes totally, then we're going to have, if not a peaceful world, we'll have a very intelligent, an aware world.
Tommy, do you think the U.S. federal government will legalize marijuana in the next 10 years?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What they have to do, they have to jump on board. We have an apprentice president in there right now, but they're going to put him out to pasture within the next couple of years. They'll probably wait for the midterms, you know, but, once we can attribute a lot of, you know, people waking up to the fact that people are, you know, who's hurting right now is the donor, you know, because there's so few drunken driving accidents now, mm-hmm. thanks to cannabis, that they don't have the donors that they used to have, you know, for the organ donors.
Organ donors,
because
right.
Because of the the accident rate, the alcohol rate has gone down. Like in Canada itself, there, I was talking to a girl whose father owned a lot of bars. Well, they're closing bars left and right because of the new alcohol limits, you know, where the police can judge themselves. They don't have to do a breathalyzer or anything. They just make it, you know, judge it themselves. Mm-hmm. And so more and more people are getting off alcohol and getting onto cannabis. I would say within the next couple of years, as soon as we get Trump out and the next president in, then cannabis will be totally legal everywhere.
Tommy, when you travel, do you take cannabis with you?
Sometimes, yeah. Most of the time. I got stopped in Detroit. We did an event there, and we're coming back, and people gave me all this cannabis. And I had a jar of it, or my son had a jar in his bag. And because he's young, the security guys, you know, the border at the airport, they pulled out the pot, and then they called the cops, and the cops came down, and the chief came down, and my son told them that we just came from a medical cannabis event, and that you know, I'm a patient, and he's a patient, and so the cop said, okay, well, where's your card? And we said, well, you know, we haven't got our card with us, but we can email one to you when we get home. And the cop said, fine. And he gave us back our weed and sent us on our way.
Wow.
Wow, so that's nice.
It's happening. It's happening all over. Of course, I'm a celebrity, so it makes a difference. But Canada, for instance, still is behind the curve there. They stop people, like if you have a arrest record, you know, they're stopping people from coming in, mostly young or artists coming in from the States to Canada. I had a friend of mine that I'm doing artwork, and he got stopped because of an old DUI arrest record or something. So both governments, you know, they have to get up to speed on everything. But right now, it's, for me, I carry it everywhere I go.
Tommy, we have a couple of questions here from listeners who want to know. One is from Anthony, who says, where do you think you would be today if you have never discovered cannabis?
I'd probably be deceased, probably in Calgary. I don't know. It's hard to say, but my future wasn't bright in Calgary. You know, I was a truck driver for Canadian Freightways. That was my job. And it wasn't the best job I've ever had. I've had better jobs.
Here's
that's where I'd be.
Yeah, here's another question. It's from a doctor. Dr. Thornton says, Tommy has been interviewed about his homegrown cannabis products. How does one buy the products online or in the L.A. area, specifically looking for oil extracts and edibles?
Okay, we're in about half a dozen or more dispensaries here in L.A. We're not selling online yet. That's not viable yet. Mm-hmm. That's happening very soon, and we got a huge line of Chance Choices called. And we've got oil, we got chocolate bars, we've got edibles, we've got flour, and the best. And what we do, we hook up with the best growers, the organic growers. Because the down thing about pot now is that people are using very dangerous insecticides and that in their products. But we don't. We test everything that we put our name on for. You know, the bad insecticides and stuff like that. So, it's not online yet, but we're getting there. It will be soon.
So, Tommy, did anyone ever find Dave?
No, Dave is still... Actually, Dave is in Denman Island.
Denman Island.
The original Dave, his name is Dave Graham. He's on Denman Island, and he grows pot for his own personal use. And he was my first acting partner until Cheech came. Dave would have been with me, but he had to stay on Denman Island. He had kids and family and everything.
Oh, that's great.
So Cheech and I left, but there is a Dave Graham, and he's on Denman Island.
So for listeners who don't know, Denman Island is actually off of Vancouver Island, which is the island that I live on, and Ian as well.
Tell me, how did you and Cheech get together? How did you meet?
Cheech was up in Canada, in Vancouver. He was a draft resister. He was dodging the draft. And he was a landed immigrant in Canada. And he was delivering carpets at the time. And I had an improvisational club in Vancouver, in a strip club. Comedy. We did comedy improvisation. And he joined up, and he was like a writer, actor for a while. And then when the group broke up, we got fired by my brother because we weren't bringing in the money the strip club was bringing in. So Cheech and I decided to stay together. The group broke up, basically, and Cheech and I decided we were going to put a band together, and instead we ended up doing comedy. And so when we found out that two of us could do it, we just went down to L.A., and the rest is history.
Now, was the strip club the Smiling Buddha?
Nope. The strip club was the Shanghai Junk. It was around the corner from the Smiling Buddha.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The Buddha, that's right. I've played there many times.
Oh, did you?
Many times.
Yeah. It was a little different.
Yeah, they're all owned by Indian guys. Guys from India. Yeah. There was a New Delhi. I used to play the New Delhi on Main Street. It's a Chinese restaurant now. It was Kiefer and Main, wasn't it? Kiefer and Gore, Main and Gore.
Yeah, that's
somewhere
right.
Around there.
Do you remember in the West End, the club, the Rentinal Circus?
Oh, they were on top of the club I had. The Elegant Parlor was below it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that was my club. It was given to me. All the clubs were given to me. It was like a gift. Hey, Tommy, you want a club?
Here you go.
Yeah, because I had a band, and the building owner, you know, he needed someone to fill in the club. And so I put an after-hours club in there, and we did really good. And we had the Rentinal Circus for a while.
Okay.
But we couldn't make it work.
Tommy, it was been a pleasure talking to you, and it was very kind of you to do this interview. I realize that you get a lot of requests for interviews, and your folks and you have been very generous with your time, and we very much appreciate it, because our purpose in you telling your story about the use of cannabis is to get the message across to as many people around the world about the medical benefits of cannabis and how it can improve people's health, and you are very kind to do this. We thank you very much.
My pleasure, you guys, and we'll do this again sometime, okay?
Thank you so much, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you, dear. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. If you like the interviews that we have on Cannabis Health Radio, you can help us. You can help us continue our mission, which is to inform as many people around the world about the medical benefits of cannabis. Here's all you have to do. Simply go to our webpage and make a donation. Any amount is fine with us. No amount is too small. No amount is too large. Make a donation to Cannabis Health Radio. And also, if you like our podcasts, then go to iTunes and like us on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. We greatly appreciate it. There you have it. Another edition of Cannabis Health Radio.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.